Good morning. It's Danger Dan here in the Talk Shop. Today's show I recorded last week with Sean Jackson. You may know him from the FXR Pan America mashup or the Panhead he built last year with the fucking crazy, fucking helicopter starter on it. Dude, really enjoy this cat. He's been racing old motorcycles across the country, around NASCAR tracks. Super rad cat. Works with the company, or he is the company. He is the company. Check out his company, Competition Distributing, as well. They make parts for really old fucking motorcycles, and they do one hell of a job doing it. He's got a bunch of new products in the works. He's got a bunch of products already. So enjoy this podcast. This show, like all shows, is brought to you by MC Shop Tees, your t-shirt of the month club, the only way to support every local motorcycle shop. Each month, we feature a different motorcycle shop from around the country, sometimes outside the country. We do a one-off limited print t-shirt only available to subscribers, and it shows up in your mailbox every fucking month. It's like Christmas. Each shirt comes with a postcard that tells you about the shop, where they're located, what they specialize in, and how you can get a hold of them. Don't miss out on another t-shirt. MCShopTees.com. Dude, we got a bunch of rad events coming up. I just got back from Nitty Gritty Chopper City. Probably, hands down, the coolest fucking venue I've ever been to for a chopper show. The nicest fucking restrooms. Got to shit on fucking porcelain every morning. It was incredible. If you missed out, you fucking missed out. Coming up next is the Texas Fandango at the Gillespie County Fairgrounds in Fredericksburg, Tennessee. Dude, swap meet, flat track racing, chopper show. Some of the best riding in Texas. Some of the best food in Texas. In the Outbound Train will be playing Friday or Saturday night. I don't even know. The Outbound Train played at a fucking treehouse at Nitty Gritty Chopper City. Who knows what we're going to pull out of our sleeve for the Texas Fandango. In May, we got the Tennessee Motorcycle Music Revival at Loretta Lynn's Ranch. Dude, home of the fucking best music in the nation. The coolest fucking bikes. The blings. In Bling Cycle Invitational. And this year we are doing a fucking hog roast at the Creek Party. And Harley Davidson has partnered up with Tennessee Motorcycle Music Revival to buy tickets for all the veterans. That's right. If you are a veteran or currently enlisted in our armed forces, you can get a free ticket to Tennessee Motorcycle Music Revival. Go there now if you need. I think you need a code. It's capital H, capital D, capital H, Hero. HD Hero will get you a free veteran pass. Now, don't you fucking use that code if you're not enlisted or a veteran. Saturday morning, there will be a memorial, a veteran's ride that is going to land at a fucking pig roast at the river where me and Lead Sled Customs and Harley Davidson will be throwing a Creek Party where a bunch of shenanigans are going to happen. I'm going to do a kickstart competition. That's right, a kickstart competition with a big fucking prize to the winner. It's going to be awesome. Do not miss out on that. Speaking of Kickstart competitions, Kickstart Mike did one at Nitty Gritty Chopper City, and he brought a new element in that I cannot wait to use. I'm stealing it from him only because he stole the idea from me that I used at a pinata party we threw for a friend a couple years ago. So get ready, dude. And it's going to be on the rocks, and your bike can hardly stand up on its kickstand at the rocks at the Creek Party in Tennessee. So I'm getting a bunch of fucking like pieces of wood cut for your kickstand, so there's no complainers, but trust me, the prize is going to be worth it. Where was I at? Oh, yeah. MCShopTees.com. Hey, if you want to support the show and you've got enough t-shirts, go to DangerDansTalkShop.com. There's a Patreon support link where you can put $5 a month into my bank account where I will proceed to burn that shit up in gas in my motorcycles or possibly diesel in my truck, getting around to these shows and recording podcasts. I can't thank you all enough who have been supporting for months, years, days, whatever. It all goes a long way. I got a $100 gift card for Lowbrow Customs. They support me and they will support you too. If you need shit to get your chopper on the road and ready for fucking spring already, you should be ready. But if not, maybe you just need some maintenance parts, go to lowbrowcustoms.com. These guys are fucking legends and trust me, they got what you need. Knives Made by Nick was on fire this week and his band FTW played and they fucking ripped up the main stage. It was incredible. Go check him out, knivesmadebynink.com, and get a knife now. Trust me, you need one on your hip. I know that if you've been listening to this show for any amount of time, you're familiar with Motorcycle Sherpa. Dude, they do the most incredible expeditions on motorcycles through the Himalayas, in Nepal, India, Mongolia, currently working on more tours all over the world. Go check them out. Bear is over there right now. He just did a trip through Nepal. I think he might have another one coming up. One of the guys from the last trip I was on just hit me up. He's going to be riding his chop down here this weekend. It'll be rad to see you, Sam. Hopefully Rex can join in. Dude, it's amazing. Did I cover everything? There's a lot of shit going on. We got the Texas Fandango, Tennessee Motorcycle Music Revival, which I think I convinced Sean Jackson to come down and check out. They'll be racing the next weekend in Tennessee on a red dirt track. I will be doing the Memorial Day thing in Red River, New Mexico, even though they have banned motorcycles. I am not going to let that slow me down. Dude, thank you all for listening. Let's get into this podcast with Sean Jackson. Sean Jackson, dude. It's a long time coming. We've never done this, have we?
No, we've done our show together, but we've never done like an actual podcast.
I know. It's fucking good. You know, it would have been a great idea to do that while I was fucking in your shop. But, you know, when you've got a bunch of fucking party animals hanging out right there, it's kind of hard to like, you know, it's like fucking herding cats at that point.
Oh yeah, it was crazy, and
we did have a lot of fun out there. Fuck
yeah, yes, it was a blast having you guys. Was a great time, and you guys are obviously welcome back anytime. So
I appreciate that, dude. Have you ridden that knucklehead around yet?
No. So I actually, after you guys left, we obviously that night we got that thing running, and
let's give them the backstory. I don't think people don't know about this.
Oh yeah. Okay. So we scavenged out a 46 knucklehead. It was like a chopper survivor, so to speak. This thing had been chopped in the 70s, and the original owner had passed away. And we were lucky enough to actually get this bike, and two other bikes as well from a local guy here, his family, I should say. And we got the bikes back here, and the story of this bike is just really cool. It had like a really old school freaking like 60s, 70s psychedelic kind of paint job on it, all done by him. It had, you know, it was obviously not the correct frame. It was a wishbone frame, 46 knuckle motor, pan transmission, had a Springer front end on it, all the cool stuff.
Yeah, definitely had the cool stuff on it.
Yeah, it was a really cool bike. And the coolest thing about the entire thing was this guy was riding it in the 80s, okay? And he wrecked it. And he didn't wreck it bad. He just laid it down. It was like a small, minor deal. And he actually wrote a note and put it in his pocket about the day, the time, the place, everything about the day he wrecked the bike. And we actually got that note from his kids when we bought the bike.
Yeah, it's too cool.
Yeah, and you guys obviously got to see it. You know, you guys were here, and you know, you guys got me talked into it, and we all had a great time that night. We got that thing running. It was crazy because, like, the amount of work we didn't do to get it running. You know?
I think that story is what got us. It was like, well, if that's what happened, and then he parked it after that, then it probably should fucking run. You know, there's not much going on here.
Exactly. And he wrecked it in the literally 85, 86. And he never rode it again. And the first time that bike ran was that night you guys were in my shop and we were messing with it. And I'll never forget your face, dude. Like, we sprayed ether in the carburetor and kicked that thing over like twice and it fired. And oh my God, man, that was so awesome. But that was a fun time.
But you rolled it off the lift shortly after we left, right? Like, I mean, I remember seeing it out in the sun afterwards.
Yeah. So I got it off. I got off the lift and I started doing a few things to it. And I was going to take it for a ride, you know, because obviously that night our liquid courage and stuff, we were talking about possibly I was going to ride it with you guys over to the chopper show.
That's
over
right.
At the St. Larry.
Yeah.
You know, and that would have been a really bad idea. And I'm glad that better minds prevailed. So because the bike, like, I went to go ride it not too long after that, and the transmission, like, got stuck. Like, I think the drum, something was stuck in the shifter drum or something, okay. And I just didn't have the time to, like, fully pull the bike apart and really work on it. So I ended up listing the thing for sale, and it sold pretty quick, actually. It was only up for, like, 3 or 4 days.
Wow.
And the dude that bought it, he's a super cool dude. His name's Tommy. He's actually from Italy, okay? And he flew over here from Italy to get the bike.
Holy
and
shit.
Yeah, it was nuts. Like, he was like, oh my God, this is a real survivor, like, chopper. You know, he's obsessed with our culture. And, you know, like, him and his buddies all have, like, old school choppers. And it fit the bill, you know? And I'm usually not keen on selling stuff overseas, like, by any means, but, like, you could tell this dude was into it, and he wasn't going to flip it to make money on or anything like that. Like, he was buying the bike to ride with his buddies in Italy. So it was a really cool story. And I actually gave him the paper with a handwritten note on there.
Oh yeah. You got to.
It belongs with the bike, you know?
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's over in Italy now. He's actually been posting stuff on his Instagram, him working on the bike, and it kind of, he's leaving it completely as it is. He just was getting it mechanically restored so he could actually ride it, you know? So
that's cool. And that's cool that you get to follow along with what happens next.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely one of those survivor cool stories. And I'm definitely glad to have just like a small sliver.
Well, now I'm even more stoked that we got it running that night, since you just fucking up and sold it to some guy overseas.
Right. I know. It makes me sound like a really bad guy, because I know how all the guys are about selling stuff overseas, and I get it, because I'm actually usually one of those guys myself. But
I mean, I don't really – I wouldn't say I don't have a problem with it, but, I mean, it's like, you know, fuck, they care, you know? I mean
– they do. And, you know, I say it all the time about even, like, you know, a lot of our bikes go to Japan, and it's like, man, these guys really respect – our culture, and I think they do right by it, you know. They do a hell of a job, and I think it's just really cool, especially nowadays, because we can act, like you said, we can kind of follow it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I get to go to Italy, and maybe that guy will fucking show up and surprise me and roll up on that knucklehead. That would be killer.
Dude, he told me, he's like, anytime you come over here, because we've been talking about going over to that Wheels and Waves event, him and his buddies ride to that, so they're like, oh yeah, anytime you come over, let us know, we'll go ride. And I'm like, oh, that'd be killer, you know. It'd be a great time. But
yeah, I that Wheels and Waves does look like a cool fucking event.
Oh, I know. I want to get out so bad. It looks bad.
Well, that was back in September. Then we did the fucking block party, and that was killer as fuck.
That was awesome.
I assume you've been to that before, right?
No, that was my first time with you guys.
That was your first time?
Yeah, because I never got to make it to one, where it was always like that time of year when crazy amount of stuff's going on. And it just actually ended up working out. And plus, John the Painter asked me to take the panhead there for the show. And I was like, I couldn't say no to that. So
yeah, that's fucking cool.
That was my first time.
John the Painter. I fucking like that guy.
Oh, he's a cool dude, man. Like, he just, like, well, him and Bobby, all those guys are awesome. But
yeah, I met some great fucking people while I was in town over there.
You guys, I was extremely jealous because, like, you guys actually got to, like, ride in there and, like, experience it.
Dude,
like, you should.
I'm telling you, our ride in there was so fucking good. So, you know, I broke down in Downsville, which was fine. You know, we fucking had a sweet spot to hang out. Jody robbed a belt from DP and overnighted it. You know, we were only there a couple days, but Jared and Velarde, they ended up making it to Boston. They went to Maine and then over to Boston. But me and
Yeah, they went all the way north. Yeah,
yeah, they did everything they said they were going to do.
Dude, those guys are beasts, man. I love those guys.
I know. But me and Al's ride in was fucking great because the way we came in, it was like, I mean, it wasn't even like we were in the city. We were on this fucking sweet, like, toll road. I can't think of what it was. It, like, came in from the north, and there was just trees and shit everywhere. And then all of a sudden, we got off of it, and bam, we were in the fucking city, like, right at rush hour. You know, I tried to take it easy at first, and then next thing you know, we're fucking riding like we're in the city, dude. Wherever we can go, we're fucking getting in where we fit in.
Yep, you have to.
It was so good. Yeah, me and Al enjoyed the fuck out of that. And then we slept on the ground behind the shop for 3 days.
Yeah, I know. That was pretty hardcore. Because, like, that area where you guys slept was, like, definitely not the nicest area either.
I don't know. It seemed pretty nice over there, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it wasn't too bad, but down where that's at, there's not really a lot of options, though. You know, it's like you're in the city, man.
Dude, there was options. We just couldn't afford them.
Well, yeah, obviously. Yeah. That stuff. Those hotels are stupid expensive.
Yeah, everything was fucking high. Everything. Food. It was so fucking worth it, though.
I couldn't believe that. So, being like, what were your expectations going in there? Like, my overall outlook of just the mass amount of chaos that happens in less than 24 hours and then it's done is, like, overwhelmingly crazy, you know?
I don't know where all those fucking people come from.
It was crazy because, like, I thought for sure that it was going to be all night and the cops would be kicking people out. Dude, it was, like, from noon to 5 on the dot. And then it just, like, stopped.
Yeah.
It was, like, pure chaos, thousands upon thousands of people doing burnouts, just absolute lawlessness, and then it's done.
And everybody left. We didn't leave. There's fucking no way we could have left at that point.
Well, you guys – oh, yeah, right. You guys got stuck in that nasty weather on the way.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, my bike does not like running in the rain either.
No.
It was not having it. No.
I thought I was going to have to come get you.
I was looking at other options because it was just not fucking working. I don't remember what it was. I think it ended up just being plug wires and a broke coil. I don't know. I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Now. Well, we got there. But you've done a lot since September, dude.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like it, but...
I mean, I've seen that you've done a lot. I mean, just by the small amount of posts that I've seen, I'm sure I haven't seen all of them. But you just got back from Daytona, went to Daytona and raced.
Yep, we were down there for the March Tons of Speed. Awesome as always, great event. It's like one of my favorite things we do.
Yeah.
It's a big thing for us just because, like, obviously that's our world with the old bikes, but being able to, like, have an outlet to take a 1919 board track racer and actually go race it.
Yeah.
I
mean, just having an outlet to go someplace and hold it wide open. You know?
Right.
I mean,
legally. Right? Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's freaking awesome, man. It's such a fun event. And I know you know it really well. You've obviously raced in it. So, it's a really cool thing, and it's definitely like a family atmosphere. You know, everybody there You know, people are there to win the race, but like in between the actual race itself, it's like everybody's family, everybody's helping each other out, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I mean, I find that that's pretty consistent in most motorcycle pits I've been to.
Right.
Everybody's there to win, but at the same time, they, you know, they want to help everybody else win as well. They don't want to win because somebody can't make it to the starting line.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not cool. Yeah, so what did you race this year?
So this year, we brought, my 1919, my twin, the Hot 61 class. And then, I also brought for the first time ever, the 1927 S pea shooter motor, that we got it in a chassis I built last year for the races. Was the first time we actually got to take it out because, this motor is like extremely rare. An actual factory race motor that Harley used to produce, and it's a 350cc single, and it sounds like it's small, but these things are like capable of 80-90 miles an hour.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, it's like, it's actually the precursor to the knucklehead. It's where Harley designed their overhead valve engine. You know, this is 1927, okay? So the overhead valves, although Harley was doing overhead valve configurations, this was the first of its kind. And if you look at a knucklehead head and you look at a pea shooter head, they're almost identically the same, just different sizes, obviously.
Wow.
So, you know, Will Harley actually incorporated that design later on in life. But
well, let's talk about those classes real quick. Cause you know, you say Hot 61, most people are like, what the fuck is like Hot 61? It's not the year 61. It is 61 cubic inches, but like it's not a flathead either, right? What is this motor?
So technically, they call these things an F head, and what it is you know, back in the early days of racing, you weren't allowed to race anything over 61 cubic inches. So like all your board track racers, all of your hill climb stuff, it was all primarily like 61 inch motors. So that's the Hot 61,
and that's that's any like Harley, Indian, like it wasn't.
Right. Across right. The so brands. Like Henderson, which was an inline four cylinder, they had 61 cubic inch Henderson cylinders for, you know, their engines, you know. So it was like it was just a standard for all the manufacturers. That way they could only go so much with it.
Yep.
And so the one we take, the Hot 61, it's primarily like board track racers. So it's all of your J model engines. And that's, I think Dan Tost, he has an Indian that he races, but other than that, it's all Harleys and it's all J model Harley stuff. Mike Lang, who is like a god in our industry, he's a legend. He's literally been racing board track bikes longer than anybody dead or alive. Yeah. It's great. I've been racing board track bikes for, oh man, since I think it's like 30 some years now, almost 40 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and the dude's just an absolute animal. He usually brings like three bikes. All of his bikes are insane. He races in his Hot 61. He races a Banjo 2 cam that he built, like the bottom end that he built, and like Ricardo Racing cylinders, which are special for that engine, that kind of thing. But same with us. We have a 61 inch motor in our Hot 61, and all the Hot means is that it's juiced up, so you can like you can put any cam you want. You can do any modification you want. There's no regulations other than it's
so there is a 61 inch class where it's just the stock bottom end stock motor.
Yeah. So the regular 61 inch board track class, which is just a stock J motor, with stock cam, you're not supposed to use like any kind of cams or anything, but
you can do is like some head work, some flowing, you know, right?
Yeah. Yep. You can like, you know, open on those motors, the head and the cylinder are one piece. So like what you do is you can modify your intake pot. They call it pocket valves or inlet cages. You can modify those to get them flown a little bit, that kind of thing. But for the most part, they're pretty stock.
Yeah. And how fast are those going compared to the Hot 61s?
I would say they're probably within like 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Oh, that's not much.
It's not much, no, because like that track's all about gearing. You know, you've been out there, like you're racing with no brakes and no transmission, so you have to gear the bike to a certain ratio so that you can pretty much just open the bike wide open and not really have to let off much in the turns. Because as soon as you let off, you're losing your momentum to get back up to speed again. You know,
so. Yeah, that was really difficult for me to figure out.
Right. it's not an easy thing to walk into. You have to, like, I'm finding, you know, we've been doing it now for 4 years, and I'm finding that every time we go out, you learn something new, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, it just seems like 10 miles an hour, the amount of work that goes into one of those hot 61 motors compared to the others. I mean, there's a lot, right? I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're, with our bike especially, because we're always, like, pushing it to the max. But this past race, this one we were just at, we had eBay Jake on my bike. And eBay, if anybody's ever seen the race, everybody knows who eBay is. He wins, I think, actually this last couple weeks ago was his 13th championship there.
Wow.
So, yeah, he won on our hot 61. And it was crazy because, like, he's coming across the finish line and the motor blew up.
So fuck.
You literally can't ask for a better time. And I was, like, totally fine with it. I'm like, oh, screw it, whatever. Because no matter what, we're pretty much having to rebuild the motor every time anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it was, like, it was really cool to finally get a win in that class. Because we've won the single class a couple times now. But to get one on that hot 61, you know, that's a tough class. So
now, does he race on different bikes every year?
Well, usually, so eBay used to have a team. He used to race under Wearcrete team, which was like him, Jody, Rusty Carvello, and they had a, you know, their own bikes for that team, and it was owned by Curtis Venable. And Curtis, he doesn't race anymore, so when he left, that whole team kind of got disbanded.
Gotcha.
So what's been going on now is, you know, eBay is such an asset to Sons of Speed, and he's such like a character and just all around good for the whole event. Billy actually built him like a really nasty hot 45 racer. So eBay's been racing Billy's 45 for the last couple years. And, you know, he didn't have a seat on a 61. And I actually pulled away from the hot 61 class because obviously it's we're racing extremely fast. It's really dangerous. But
the fucking hot 61 vet class, I'll never forget. I think it was eBay Jake and Matt Woxler like 3 years ago. Do you remember that?
Oh, that's Billy Applegate on Matt's bike. Yeah.
Oh, dude, those two, they just kept going. It was like, man, it was a picture perfect finish. I mean, I swear they just raced like three different times at the end, like just kept going.
Dude, they touched handlebars in that race. Do you remember that?
Dude, they were fucking going around the whole turns, like literally touching each other the whole fucking time, dude, it seemed like.
Those guys are nuts, man. Like watching, so I can like ride a bike decently. When you put eBay on one of your bikes and get to see what he can do with it, it just makes you like, what the hell? Like, he was hitting turns so freaking hard on this bike. I wish I could show you a picture of my rear tires. Like, they're melted.
Oh, like, my word.
Yeah, it's like he was hammering this thing. And, I mean, just absolutely, it's so fun to watch. I mean, you've seen it. And it's so hard to explain to people that haven't actually gone to see these races. Because I know a lot of people are like, oh, these things are old. They're not going that fast. But you got to think, man, like, you know, 70, 80 miles an hour with no brakes.
It's fucking wild. Well, I mean, what gets me and what I was asking about him racing different bikes, like, he's got to fucking trust you guys completely, you know, that,
oh, yeah.
You know, like, he is putting his life on the line, assuming that you guys crossed the fucking T's and dotted the I's when he put that fucking thing together.
And this is the craziest thing, okay? So, listen to this. So, you know, Rusty Carvello is, he's on our team. We picked Rusty up after, you know, the Curtis team got disbanded. Okay. And so Rusty, back in October, he raced my 61. And then I was going to take over racing the singles. Because, you know, after Tom's wreck, he's been sitting on the sideline with the single class. So I was going to take over the singles. We were going to put Rusty on our 61. And then he was also going to race one of our hot 45s eventually. So Rusty got sick, so he couldn't make it. So I was like, oh, man, I guess I'm going to race the 61, too, if I can't find somebody to ride for us.
Yeah.
So I was out there a couple weeks ago. I was out there testing and tuning the bike, getting it dialed in. And I'm out there because we just had a fresh rebuild on the motor. I just had rebuilt the motor with our good buddy Bill Page out in Kansas a couple months prior to this. And I was out there ripping around on the bike, getting the carburetor dialed in. And I reached down like in, I didn't have my top end. It wasn't all there. You know, I was lacking some top end. So I'm going through
top end power.
Right. And I'm going into turn three and I reach down and adjust my carburetor. And luckily we have the Linkard on that bike. It's sticking out the side, like where it can get all the cool air, you know, it's coming off the right hand side of the bike.
Yeah.
So I reach down, I lean the carburetor out like two clicks, which for a Linkard is a lot. And the thing, like, oh my God, I wish it just woke right up. It was like, whoa, you know, power just came on. And now I'm hauling the mail, you know? So I'm like, holy cow, this thing is dialed. So I got it in. My front tire was wobbling pretty bad. So I let off after I did a couple hot laps and it turned out that the spokes were coming loose on the front tire. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. I was like, I'm ripping, you know, I have the bike wide open as fast as it'll go. And I look down and my front tire is like, it's literally almost touching the forks coming down. That's how out of balance it is.
Whoa.
So I get it in back into the pits. I'm like, all right, guys, the bike's running great, but the tire is out of true. So long story short, we trued the front wheel up just by, we made our own little truing stand out of a pair of vice grips and some other random materials. And got the front wheel dialed back in. And that night, I found out Rusty couldn't make it to race for us. So I'm like, oh, man. So I talked to Tom, and I was like, hey, if Billy's okay with it, you know, I was like, I'm going to ask eBay to race for us on the 61 because technically it's not hurting anything. He's not on that class anyway.
Yeah.
So I go up to eBay. Or at first I went to Billy and I said something and then he was fine with it. So we went to eBay Jake and I was like, hey man, do you want to race my 61? And he was like so freaking pumped. It was insane. Like obviously he wants to race. It's eBay. He wants to race as much as he can.
Yeah.
So he was like super thankful and pumped and everything else. And I'm like, all right, you know, I'm like getting ready to walk him through the bike. And like, he doesn't even, you know, he asked me like three or four questions and that's it. The biggest thing was, I'll never forget this dude. He grabbed the bike and he laid it over as far as it would go over till it touched the peg to check the lean angle.
Oh my gosh. And he goes,
yeah, it was awesome. And like, he just keeps laying it down, down, down. And he looks at me and he goes, I think I can work with that. He's like, that's a pretty good lean angle. I mean, like, dude, this bike, I have this thing set up to race, you know? So it's like, it's pretty much like laying on its side.
That's, yeah, like the handlebar is about to touch.
Right. And he's like, I can work with that. And sure as shit, dude, if you see pictures of him ripping on those corners, he had that thing laying down. I mean, it was cool as hell.
Did you tell him that your wheel about came apart while you were test riding it?
I didn't tell him that till afterwards. I said, hey, we had to. No, just joke. I told him. He was really cool. He's like, hey, he's like, is there anything I need to know about the bike? And I just walked him through a couple of the basics. You know, I'm like, well, hey, I've been out there riding it for the last 2 days. I got it pretty well dialed. And I told him, I'm like, just let it rip. And the really cool thing about after it was all said and done and he won the class and everything, he came in and he goes, dude, he's like, that's the best handling 61 board track racer I've ever been on.
And, oh shit. That's cool.
It was really cool because it was neat to finally see the full potential of that bike because, you know, obviously I can't ride, like eBay can, and to see him actually put that thing through its paces was really neat to
Did you change any gearing for him or was it just fucking ready to go? I mean,
no, I mean, we had it pretty close gearing wise because we had it, the gearing from where we were back in October when Rusty was racing.
Yeah.
And, you know, eBay and Rusty are pretty close as far as race abilities go. So eBay is like, hey man, if Rusty likes that gearing, that's where I'm sure I'll be fine with it. So, yeah, we left it there, and it worked out in the long run. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. I raced the pea shooter for the first time ever.
Now tell us like the pea shooter class. Explain that to us. What bikes can race, or you know what that class consists of.
So that one was the single class, which the single class is pretty no holds barred as well. Like it's anything that's like early pre 30, single cylinder engine. So pretty much like a single cylinder Harley. Single cylinder, actually the bike I raced was a single cylinder JEP, which is a JAT motor, J Presswich. That's a British racing motor that they used to do. And that bike was a bike that Billy had built, a speedway bike. that were raced on the dirt, and they converted it to an asphalt racer. Overhead valve, just a beast of a bike.
Yeah.
And Jason Brooks races that one. There used to be a couple other guys that weren't there for March. There's a guy that races like a 1913 single cylinder. There's, you know, we usually have a blanked off single. So we take like a twin JD motor, like a 61 inch J motor, and we actually block off the rear cylinder and just run the front cylinder.
Wow.
That way you have the rotating mass from a twin cylinder, like the bigger flywheels, but you only have one cylinder, but you still qualify for that class. So
that's now, the class. And now all these classes, if I'm not mistaken, they just you're just qualified by the motor, like the power plant. And then the rest of the chat, like everything else is no holds bar, correct?
Right. Yeah, correct. Yeah. So it's strictly off of the rule of the motor, the size of the motor, what you have done to it. And the rest of the rule is just don't have your brakes hooked up and don't have just have your transmission locked if you have a transmission at all.
Yeah. I mean, that not the case in the 45 class, right?
Yeah. So the 45s have transmissions. So they ask that you have a lock on it or that you just can't shift during the race. Gotcha. So a lot of go out there and pick a gear. And I mean, that's a class you race, right?
Yeah.
It was a 45. So.
Yeah. That's why I was clearing that up because, you know, I couldn't, I wasn't sure about the other class, but I was pretty sure. I mean, everybody has like most of the racing chassis, or maybe not most of them, but a lot of them are pretty modern, you know, as far as like the wheels.
Yeah.
Some of the fucking full custom frames.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's Mike Lang is like probably one of the only guys that races like 100% period correct stuff. And like what I mean by that is he's in the hot 61 board track. Well, he's actually in three classes. He's in the 45s, the hot 61, and the regular 61. But his hot 61 and his regular 61, he both runs clincher tires.
That's crazy.
Yeah, which most people believe clincher tires are suicide, because the thing that's different about a clincher tire versus a modern tire is if your air pressure fluctuates at all, and by fluctuates, I mean if it drops below a certain PSI, the tire just falls off the rim. So, like, it doesn't go flat. It just falls off the rim because, like, the pressure is what holds the tire onto the rim. It clinches it from the sidewalls.
Yeah,
so
crazy.
Yeah, Mike runs clinchers, and I think they're crazy. Like, you have to have, like, 70-some PSI in a clincher. So you have to be careful. You just really got to monitor your tire pressure. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I was running like 20 PSI in mine.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, it's a totally different world with clinchers. And that dude, he's always runs clinchers. And knock on wood, he's always done really well. So.
Yeah, he's a fucking animal. He is a fucking animal.
Mike's going to be the guy that we all look back on when we're like 50 and 60 years old. And you're going to be like, man, I knew that guy. And I got to like race with
him. And he's such a cool cat too, man.
He is. I really like Mike a lot.
Yeah, he's a fucking legend. So you're getting everything. You already tore the broken, busted motor down, getting ready for October. Or I guess May, well, actually, you're going to race in May, huh?
Well, I'm not going to be able to have that thing ready for May just because of the deadlines and everything else I have going on. But we will be there in May at the Tennessee Jam, which is the end of May during Memorial Day weekend.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll be ready for October because we're going to come. Oh, man, we're coming in October with like 5 bikes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's going to be nuts for October, but I actually ended up, I didn't get much of a bike week this year. Right after Sons of Speed was over, pretty much loaded the trailer and started blowing home to Pennsylvania. So.
Yeah, you just left your wife behind or what?
Yeah, she was out ripping around on the monkey, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies and stuff while, you know, I went back.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I mean, you had a pretty big year. Was it last year? Or was it the year before? You built the Pan America in 21 or 22, right?
Yeah, I bought it in 21, built it in, oh, I finished building in 22 for the Virginia City Roundup.
Yeah. And that was the one I didn't go to.
You're right. You didn't make it to that one that year. Because I remember, well, yeah, because we were talking during that whole thing.
And then fucking Doug ended up with it.
Yeah, Doug Wathke, dude. Around the world, Doug.
I know. It's so fucking cool.
The only guy that probably rides as much as you do.
Oh, that nobody holds a fucking candle to that guy. I mean, even like there are some people that have ridden more miles in a year than Doug rode that year. But as far as like consistently just riding the piss out of any and all motorcycles year after year, it's hard to beat, you know?
Dude, he's a legend in his own right. I mean, Doug's literally ridden in every hostile, crazy country there can possibly be. I mean, heck, he was riding in Ukraine during
the war. Fucking rode right into Kyiv, dude. Not just Ukraine. He rode right into the middle of the fucking war during the war.
Yeah, like, didn't he post a picture with like a blown up tank or something too?
Yeah, with a pile of cars. He told me the fucking smell of the dead bodies as he fucking was riding through town was undeniable.
That's like beyond hardcore, man.
And he rode there from Alabama, you know? Like, he didn't fucking fly over there and get a motorcycle. No, and that was just like a stop. He was riding to the Isle of Man. He was like, you know, I'll just go by Kyiv, you know, on my way.
That's so crazy, man. Doug is like, he's one of those guys, he's like my hero kind of guy, you know? It's like, you don't know how he does what he does, but he just keeps doing it. And I was like super lucky. I was so happy he won that bike for more than one reason, but it was cool because I got to drop the bike off to him because he's down in Alabama, you know?
Oh, so you got to go by his place?
Yes.
Isn't that legendary as fuck, dude?
Dude, I was like blown away because I've always heard crazy stories about Doug's place. And then I get there and I was like, this is like the coolest place I've ever been. Like,
it really is.
He's got that shop from, it was a 1913 Ford dealership. And oh my God. Have you been in there?
Yeah.
Oh man. It's so
bad. What I love about Doug is like, you know, if a random person was to just meet Doug, they would have no idea, you know, would have no, like it would take some prying to get information out of him. You know, like he's not just going to talk about any of his trips, the places he's been, the bikes he's ridden, the bikes he's owned, the bikes he does own.
The 100.
I mean, he's a fucking legend, and his shop's rad as fuck. I mean, you know, he's got a bunch of cool riding stories, but I think my favorite is when they went to the D-Day invasion anniversary, the 75th, and then invaded Germany again on the 45s.
Oh, yeah, when they all went over for the for Normandy. I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, that's just too fucking cool.
Yeah, he does some really awesome stuff, man, and like you said, you wouldn't even know it. Like, Doug, he's actually kind of abrasive until you get to know him. Like, if you don't know him,
I know him well, and he is still abrasive, dude. He might be more abrasive now that I know him, you know?
Yeah. He's probably one of the smartest, quick-witted dudes I've ever met. Like, he'll rip on you, and you don't even know you're getting ripped on.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, he's also the type of guy that will crack jokes that nobody else gets, and he'll keep snickering and cracking the same jokes that nobody else gets.
Yep. I love it.
Yeah, so he won that. You raffled that off, and he won that. That's how that happened?
Yeah, so, like, him and a bunch of my other buddies that, like, older guys that like Cannonball Buddies and just like vintage guys in general, they all went in on that thing and he won it. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. Cause I kind of did it untraditionally. I didn't do it like the manual, like ticket thing where you write the numbers out. Okay. I did like a number generator between however many spots I got rid of. And I think Doug did, he bought four spots.
Well, now, okay, so when I do it, when I do the number generator, like when I'm drawing something on the podcast, I start clicking the generate button as I'm talking about it. And then when I get done talking, like when I finish the sentence and the winner is, then I stop pressing it. Like I'm like, click, 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 click. You know, I'm giving away a $100 gift card to Lowbrow Customs and the winner is, and then I stop pressing it. How did you do it? Did you just pull it up and press it one time?
Yeah, so I found this the program and I did it. I was on live Instagram live, and I found it was like the big wheel one. So it has like something everybody could see instead of just a number. It was like a big wheel that spun. And I as it was spinning, I just let up like, hey everybody, we're getting ready. Check your numbers, blah blah blah. You know, the normal raffle thing. And then I hit the thing once and it just stopped on her number on the wheel and it was Wathke. And I was like, holy shit, Wathke won. You know, I was blown away. And it was so funny, dude, because Wathke wasn't watching the live. Okay. He wasn't on.
Of course he wasn't.
And, yeah. Why would he be?
Yeah. He forgot that he bought his tickets, I'm sure.
He was actually in India riding to the top of one of the mountains in India when he bought the tickets. So he probably totally forgot about it. So, I went on Facebook because, you know, a lot of the older guys like Facebook. So I went on Facebook and I was like, hey. that was a direct burn to Doug. And
all the old people on Facebook.
Yeah. And I we're friends on there. So I post on there a picture of the bike and I tagged him and I said, hey, if anybody sees Doug Wathke, let him know he won this. And apparently one of our other really good buddies, Cole Deister, he had called Doug and been like, you son of a bitch, because Cole really wanted the bike.
Yeah.
And Doug thought he was messing with him. He's like, I didn't win that. He thought Cole was, you know, pulling his leg or whatever.
Yeah.
And it took a few minutes for him to sink in. And when he saw my post, he's like, oh, my God, I can't believe I won, you know. So
that's cool.
It was funny.
Yeah, I already tried to get him to go on a ride with me on it. He's like, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
He doesn't trust it, I don't think.
No, I mean, no, but I mean, he doesn't trust much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's one of those things. That was like a first year, too, so electronics can be a little wonky. You never know.
Yeah, but some people did not get great editions of that first year Pan America. We'll just be honest.
No. No, I was one of them.
I was very fucking fortunate, you know?
Yeah, because how many miles do you have?
I just ripped mine down to the gas station to get cigarettes. Dude, I just put a new pipe on it. Holy shit, dude. So, dump truck, you know, he used to work with a friend of mine in Louisiana, and then he started working with this company called Sawicki Speed.
Oh, yeah.
And he was real cool. He's like, hey, man, can we send you a pipe for promo, you know, just make a couple posts, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, man, Dovehouse, I love you. And I would like to run this pipe, but I'm not going to tell you guys that I'm going to promote it until I use it. You know, like, what if I don't fucking like it? You know, like, I'm not.
Yeah.
So he was like, all right, no problem. Just run it. If you like it, cool. If you don't worry about it. So I fucking put that motherfucker on, dude. And I was just like, oh, my God, this is obnoxiously loud. Like, fucking sounds like a V8 with a cam in it. Like, I put it on the morning I was fixing to ride to an adventure rally in Austin. And when I crack it off, I'm just like, holy shit. You know, like, I don't know if I like this, right?
And is it too loud?
Yeah, because it's so fucking loud, dude. But so I'm going to this adventure rally with a bunch of, you know, fucking with the Gore-Tex Vortex in full effect, right?
Yeah.
And I've got like a 3.5 hour ride. I swear to you, Sean, I enjoyed riding my motorcycle more after putting that pipe on.
Really?
Like and I think it's just because it is loud. But once you get in the wind, it's not as obnoxiously loud as I first thought. And it's just loud enough to cover up the motor noise. So now when I hit the throttle at fucking 50 miles an hour, I hear the pipe, you know, fucking clacking, and I don't hear the motor, you know? And it's like,
right,
with the stock pipe, when you get going really fast, really all you hear is the wind. Like you hear the motor kind of running, you don't hear the exhaust at all, and the wind gets louder. Well, now it's like, dude, I'm running it high into the RPMs. Like, normally I would shift around $5,000, you know, unless I'm riding really aggressively. But, dude, now I'm like climbing up to 7.5 in third gear, going 75, 80 miles an hour, just because it's just Rip. It's just making such a rad noise. I honestly like it way more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes it feel and sound like a totally new bike.
Well, that's the thing, man. Like, those engines are, like, absolute powerhouses, you know? So, it's like, once you open them up, you know, it was the same with the one I built. I put a pipe on it for my buddy Noon Inc. He's on Instagram.
Okay.
And he custom made me a pipe for that thing before they ever existed, you know, because this is the very first year they came out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told him the same thing, like, make me a really aggressive pipe. Well, I didn't really think about it, man. He made an aggressive pipe. He did exactly what I asked him to do. And the farthest I ever rode that thing before I got rid of it was like 600 miles. And by the end of the 600 miles, like, my head was hurting. Like, it was, like, that bike was loud. And dude, that was actually the very first thing.
This one is like fucking perfect. And what really sealed the deal is when I rolled up into the adventure rally, right? You know, and everybody's fucking on their bikes, and dude, nobody has a bike that sounds anything like this. You know, like, fucking heads are turning when I fire that thing up. You know, like,
oh yeah, man, because like, what are you riding with? Like Tenere's and BMWs.
Oh yeah, exactly. Well, there was more Pan Americas at this event than I have seen at any event that wasn't like a Harley Davidson event. You know, like, this was just an adventure rally in Texas. And when I pulled in at the gate, the lady was like, oh my God, another Pan America. You know, we can't believe this is, there are so, you know, and she said that, and I'm like, yeah, whatever. But no, there really was. I met a bunch of dudes that fucking, I've met multiple people that had ridden all the way to Alaska, that had ridden all over the country on their fucking Pan Ams. And they were younger dudes. They were like fucking our age. Where everybody else there, not everybody, but I would say the majority of the younger people were all on Pan Americas.
Well, that dude, that's where I'm going to tell you that Harley definitely nailed it with that bike, is they appealed to the younger generation, the market that they can't seem to sell anything else to, right?
Yeah.
And they did it with that bike. And that's what it was like. It really is a cool bike, you know? It's a beast too, you know.
Dude, and it's only going to get better, you know. Like, it really is. Like, that was their first run at it, you know. Like, and it's competing, or you know, it is equivalent, or at least like on the same spectrum as a BMW GSA 1250 that they've been making for a long time. You know, like, for it to even, you know me, I love my bike.
But, dude, it's. That's your style riding too, you know? And, I'll be honest with you. I kind of got excited when they were hinting that there's possibly like a 750 version coming out, because to me, I think if you could take that freaking motor, that platform, and just lighten it up ever so slightly, you're going to have a really lethal weapon on your hand, you know?
Well, I think Pat's building us one right now.
Really?
Yeah. Cause he got one of the Sportsters, to build a bike for Born Free.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's going to build like a fucking muscle car off-road machine.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be fucking bad as shit. I mean, I don't, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that they're excited about a smaller version of it. But, you know, the Sportster uses the same motor. It weighs the exact same as the other one. It's just detuned. It's not as fast. I don't know that you could build that bike. I don't know that you could build a smaller chassis around that bike and it be as functional.
Well, I thought they were supposed to be coming out with like a dedicated 750 instead of the 1250.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so.
I heard through the rumor mill that was like a possibility. But yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, like, it would probably take a while anyway for that to come out.
Well, dude, I'm just telling you, you just need seat time on that Pan America off-road. Not fucking customized into an FXR, but just that fucking stock Pan America. Like, I mean, it's fucking fun. But anyways, the new pipe, I'm pretty stoked about Sawicki Speed. Like, they,
That's cool. I'm gonna have to look at it. I haven't seen her play for that yet.
I mean, it's nothing. It's just a fucking piece of stainless, you know. I mean, and I think that's one thing I like about it too. Is it's not like, you know, I guess they had two options. One that has like a pipe that you can like rebuild or restuff or however the fuck that works. Or you can get the one that I have where it's just like all sealed up. It's all welded, you know, like you just bolt it on, fucking go. There's no tuning involved. That was one thing the guys down at the event asked me, was if I had to have it like dynoed or, you know, some kind of tune done to it. And fuck, I just bolted it on and ripped ass.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff in the aftermarket for that bike.
Yeah, it's definitely taken a while, you know. You know, when it came out, parts were hard to come by at that point for, like, you know, we're talking about parts that have been coming out for years or, like, you know, stuff that people used to have inventory of was dwindling away. And then, you know, here I am, like, hoping all these aftermarket companies make a bunch of badass shit for the Pan Am, and they just didn't right out of the gate. Well, it's like they didn't need to take chances on something new when they couldn't even keep in stock the shit that they knew would sell, you know?
Right, exactly.
So now it's finally coming around, and there's quite a few companies that are making stuff. Toratech being probably having the biggest selection of stuff, you know, from small stuff to, you know, entirely different tail sections. And yeah, I've been having fun on mine. So you built yours, you raffled it off,
yep. Right?
And then you built a fucking you went from a Pan America to a Panhead that, like, you know, fucking went viral about every other week, especially once you put the fucking helicopter starter on it.
Oh yeah, it had an aviation grade World War II era inertia starter I put on it. I didn't think that bike was going to do what it did. I really didn't.
I didn't either. You showed me drawings of it, or maybe you just had them on the internet, and that frame, I was like, oh my God, this is wild. You know, like,
yeah,
it's just so different than what, you know, what has typically won the People's Champ, you know, like it was not, I mean, you did your own fucking thing. You stayed true to that. And it just wasn't in line with what has worked in the past, and it fucking killed it, dude.
Yeah, and it was like, man, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And it's going to be one of those things, you know, like they talk about, like, chasing that previous thing you did. And
oh, yeah,
it's like, to me, I don't think I'll ever be able to get to that point again. Just because, like, I know you never say never, but, like, honestly, that, like, I don't know what it was about it. And I always thought it'd be cool. You know, we're sitting there. I actually... We came up with a basis for that whole bike while I was sitting in a hotel room, like a year prior to that. And when I got into the People's Champ, we're like, hey, no better time to try it than now. You know, if we're going to go all out, let's go all out with it. And everybody's like, oh, you got to ride it though. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to ride it. I don't care. I'll ride it for the competition, you know? So, but yeah, it went viral. They got pushed all over the internet, all over Facebook. I had, you know, magazines reaching out. Even right now, I had another big company reach out and ask me to use the video and stuff. It's just like, it's still kind of making its rounds, which is nuts. It's almost a year later, you know? So,
I mean, it's fucking rad. I mean, so tell me about this starter. I thought it was a helicopter starter. You're just saying it was like an aviation grade.
It's a World War II era hand crank inertia starter, and the planes they used to use them on was like a Sturman biplane, or the P-40 Warhawks used to have them. I found it on eBay, and because I was looking for a small one as I could get. Like Model A's and some other random cars, diamond trucks, they all used to have hand crank inertia starters. And
now let me wrap my mind around this and help everybody else. This is kind of like those old little cars that you would get with the wind up wheels, where the more you would push them, they would spin around even faster and hold that momentum. Correct?
Yeah.
Same kind of principle.
Exact same concept. you wind it up, and it's a series of like planetary gears, and the faster that you get the RPM, it's like a 300-to-1 reduction rate. So oh, it's
wow.
like,
yeah.
Yeah. So like on the one side you're running, I can't remember the exact numbers. I used to have it all figured out when we built the bike. It was like the output RPM to start the motor was like 96 RPM on the output side, and the input side was like 24,000 RPM.
Okay.
So it just reduces a massive amount of inertia and puts it into a way geared down box. And it's all a contained unit. I got it off eBay. My best buddy, Kevin, he's the one that helped me, design and actually make it work on the bike. We use a lot of CAD and engineering stuff like that, but, it was like, man, I don't know if this is going to work. You know, like you can plan around building the bike with it and everything. It was literally the first piece of the bike we built. Like we built the entire bike around that starter. So wow. It was like one of those things, like I was nervous as hell because I didn't get to see if it was actually going to work the way we planned on it working until I pulled the lever for the first time.
I mean, and it was practically built at that point, right? Like you didn't test fire it off before you finished the rest of the bike. Like you built the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. And it was like nuts because there's no way to test it. Like, unless you build like a test stand or something for it. But like I, when I first got the starter, I posted a video on my Instagram when I first got it. I got it and I strapped it in a chain vise on my workbench and I cranked it over because like the biggest thing I wanted out of that starter was the sound. Yeah. You have to hear it in person. The sound of that starter is like deafeningly loud. It sounds like an air raid siren as you build up momentum. And I was like, man, I hope this thing works. Cause I asked the guy on eBay, I was like, does it work? And he goes, I don't know. He's like, it spins over. He's like, I don't have an airplane to test it on. So I didn't really have any way of checking it out. And that video that went viral, that's literally the first time I started the bike. So
you know, it caught the emotion of that too. And I think that's why that did so well. Was like,
yeah,
you know,
stoke
was
right.
Fucking high, you know?
Yeah. Cause like at the end of the video, you can kind of see me like the one angle, like you catch my arms going into the air. I was like fist bumping the air. I was so excited. Yeah.
I bet so, dude. I mean, you put so much work into that thing and now you're like, well, is it going to work? You know,
right.
Is it going to do its job now?
Yeah. It would have been a major letdown if it didn't.
I mean, there would have been so many happy people on the internet though, you know, cause there was people just no way. Is that going to work? You know?
Oh yeah. It just like anything on the internet, it garnered just as much hate as it did.
what was the worst message you got about that? Surely there was something good.
Oh dude, I got some gnarly messages. Let me tell you, the one that sticks out to me the most, was a guy, it was an older guy, I would say probably in his 60s, which I give him credit for using Instagram because that's usually not the case.
Yeah, he didn't get it through Facebook?
No, it was from Instagram. He, Hot Bike had reposted the video, okay? It was right after it went viral, and they posted the video on their page, like on their main page. And all these, you know, it garnered way more positive than it did negative, but it was just one negative thing. The guy, he said something and I was tagged in it. That's the only reason I saw it. He said something about my starting handle, because the very first video that went viral with the bike, I started it with a bent piece of conduit. I literally just went to my vise. I bent the pipe because I had nothing to crank it with. I hadn't built my crank yet for it.
Yeah.
I was so excited to test the bike. I was like, screw it. I'm just going to use this pipe that I have laying around. So that's what I did. So I have the rest of the bike sitting there. It's got dual carburetors. Everything's hand custom made, motors polished, this thing's sitting there. And he comments on my bent piece of conduit. He goes, like this idiot uses a bent piece of conduit on $100,000, something like that, you know? And I didn't even reply to him. There was another guy that responded to him and tagged me. And said, oh, yeah, you think he's honestly going to use that? Like, this is the first time he's starting the bike, you moron. Like, he was, like, ripping on the guy for me. Yeah. And all I did was go to that guy that was in my favor, I guess. And I said, don't worry about replying to these guys. They're idiots. You know, they just have to comment on the one random thing. And that guy, he got so mad that I said that. He like came after me, dude. He's like, you have a dumb fucking haircut and like all this.
Oh my God.
He went after me. And I was like, dude, I was like, seriously, like we were talking about the bike. Now you're coming after me, but what, whatever. Yeah. It was just that one that like particularly stuck with me. I thought it was pretty funny, but, yeah, you have it. It's all part of putting your life out there on the internet, I guess,
that,
you know?
That so. Is, I mean, I honestly feel like I don't get as much hate as I think I should, you know, like I don't get it. And maybe it's cause I'm not looking for it or paying attention most of the time.
Well, you're spreading like a positive message, though. You're out there always like, hey, you know, I don't know how anyone could say hateful things about you. I don't think I've ever seen a picture of you without a grin on your face. So,
I mean, but that bike is, I mean, that's positive, you know, I mean,
but dude, in the custom build world, it's like, if you do something that the masses don't believe, like, they come after you. Like I had guys that were buddies of the other guys, like coming after me and just like saying some really crazy stuff. And
from
like,
the other competitors.
Yeah. It was like, it was nuts, man. It was like, it actually, to be honest with you, dude, it was like, there were some times I was like, man, like, why am I doing this? Like, you know, like, why don't I just keep this stuff to myself? But then I, you know, my wife's always like, hey, you know, you're going to have haters, you know, that just is what it is. Cause I don't do it to like set myself apart from anybody. I do it to try to challenge myself. Like I don't want to do the stuff that's been done. I try to do the things that are different. And that's just what I enjoy, I guess, you know? Yeah.
Well, that bike was definitely different. You know, I mean, I just think about, you know, starting a bike up for the first time, after building it. That has one carburetor, a Kickstarter, you know, standard ignition. Yep. You know, I can't imagine like all the shit that all you know, getting those carbs just to a point where they're both gonna fucking work good enough for this fucking starter that you put on. I mean, there's a lot going on there.
Oh yeah, that was a challenge, dude.
What kind of ignition did you run on it?
I just ran a stock. Point setup, okay. Because the points is what we know.
Yeah.
And they're actually dead nuts reliable when you have them set up correctly. So we ran points, and then we ran a cycle electric starter or generator on there. Gotcha. I wanted to do a magneto setup, but with the way I built my exhaust and everything and the way the frame was, not being traditional, it wouldn't fit. So
yeah. What were you going to say about the carburetors?
Oh, the carburetors. My really good buddy, Mike Silvio, Cyclemost down in Tennessee. He's like a linker god. And he really saved my ass because like, it was like literally 3 days, dude, before I had to drive to California to ride this bike for the show. And anybody that knows the Biltwell, the People's Champ show, your bikes have to run and they have to make it a 50-mile a ride to the show to Cook's Corner, and they take you right out of the parking lot. They take you up like a 1,000-foot cliff, and that's like not a joke. Like you literally come out of the parking lot, you just instantly start climbing switchbacks and all the way to the top of the mountain. So I'm geeking out because I have the bike running, the starter works, everything's good. But as soon as I get on the road and I start going down the road, it kept breaking up on me. You know, I didn't have the dual carbs dialed. And long story short, Mike's like, dude, get down here, we'll get it. Yeah, I loaded the bike up. I, you know, beat-feeded it down to Tennessee, and we spent 9 hours, and he got my carbs dialed and retuned. Like, we had to change the Venturis and everything else, and he did a bunch of crazy stuff on them. And we got the thing tuned, and I had literally, dude, 2 miles of seat time on the bike before I went to California.
Oh, my word.
Talk about... it was not a good experience until I pulled into Cook's.
I was going to say, how much relief did you feel when you finished that ride and parked it at Cook's?
It was, I can't even describe it to people, dude. It's like 8 months of your life of you putting everything you have into something and then still not knowing if that's going to be enough until you get to a certain destination.
Well, not only putting everything you've got into it, but then putting it out into the world for other people to fucking put their opinions all over as well.
Right. It was like, it was that competition. I'll never say anything bad about it. I love those guys and it was awesome. And I'll never, ever not say that I should have, you know, I never will regret it for a day of my life, but I will tell you this, it was stressful. Like it added, it probably took a year and a half off my life. Let's put it that way. Between the deadlines and they run a tight ship too. It's not like a normal, like, you know, I'm doing Born Free right now and it's like Born Free, super relaxed. And it's like, oh, post when you want, you know, have the bike running and see you in June, you know, yeah. This thing's like, hey, post every week, post stories. This is a deadline for the photo shoot. This is the deadline for that. The bike has to run, da da da. And it's like, oh my God, like it's just, it's a different experience. But the guys over at Billwell, Josh and Jeff and all Flynn and all them guys, oh my God, man, they have such an awesome setup and they run that thing like a tight ship. And it's just, it's great. And I'm so glad. Be a part of that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you were that was their second year, right? When you were in it, or maybe their third.
I think it was like their second or third since they took it over, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, and those guys run a tight ship. You know, they got, you know, they got their shit together, you know?
Oh dude, they're awesome. Like the Biltwell guys are the best. Like we went out there, we got there like a little, you know, a couple days early, and they took us on a tour of their shop and showed us the entire operation, and man, it's just, they definitely got it going on, man.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you won that. You fucking, people of Cook's Corner. I mean, they physically put their names on paper and vote, right? Just drop something in a box. Isn't that how that works?
No, it's completely done on, you have to go on the internet and vote through the link that Bellwell posts. So you get voted into the top six by the people. And then you also get voted in, you know, the winner gets voted by the people. So like, I can't remember how many days it was now before. It was like 3 or 4 days prior to the competition. They open up voting and somebody has to go on, click on your picture or whatever and vote for the bike.
Gotcha.
That they choose, and then at the end they tally up all the votes and whoever gets the most wins.
That's fucking cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a really good experience, but I'll tell you right now, the best feeling I ever had was the day when we pulled into that bar. It was like 8,000 pounds off my shoulders. It was awesome.
Well, that's cool. Well, and it got you in the playbook for Born Free.
Yeah,
I mean, you got to put that bike in the builders, you know, in the builders section right at Born Free. And then they've invited you back this year to build another bike.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how it all worked out, you know. My first major show being Virginia City Roundup, and we went from that to the People's Champ. And then from that, we went to Born Free. So it's been kind of a whirlwind the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome, dude. I'm stoked for you.
I appreciate that, man. It's been cool too because you get to really meet a lot of my really good friends now are from that stuff, you know. So yeah.
Well, I mean, so how do you approach this new build? And are you, you know, I mean, when you got invited, did you have a bike kind of already in the works or planned, or did you start from scratch when Grant called you up and said, hey, we want you to build another bike?
Well, I actually, it sounds kind of crazy. So like I was already, I was probably 3/4 of the way done with the Panhead when I started figuring out this next bike. And it kind of progressed from there. Like I had a lot of it figured out. What I typically do for builds is I start drawing stuff. Like I start sketching stuff. And then it kind of just digressed from there. But when Grant reached out, I pretty much had a good idea what I was going to do. And I'd actually already started like physically drawing the bike like out like life size. And what I mean by that is like I wanted to take a major hard right turn on this one. Like I wanted to do it completely different from the Panhead. I wanted to not only focus on the era of bikes that we work on, you know, through our company competition, but I wanted to also like pay homage to the guys from the original racers, like from the, you know, teens and 20s. And what I mean by that is like the factory race teams and for these manufacturers like Harley and Indian and all them guys, they had engineers and racers that were dedicated to improving performance during the board track era. Like that's all they did. Yeah. And a lot of the stuff that we have today is because of those guys. It's because of those guys. So, I wanted to like pay homage to that and then also add like a little bit of customized creativity to it. So I physically drew this bike on the ground with sidewalk chalk. I took a motor that I'm going to build. I laid it on the ground. I drew with chalk on the ground around the motor, like the old chassis guys would have done. And like just physically started from there. And then I built my frame to those drawings on the floor. I just heated up tubing and started bending it like by hand. And I got a frame out of it and just a completely different aspect rather than CAD. You know, we went from computer to old school. So
yeah,
it was just kind of like the approach with this one. And then the motor on this is completely built by us. The entire, minus the cases, just the flywheel cases where the flywheels go into, the rest of the motor is 100% custom. We made the heads, made the cylinders, the cam chest. It was made by design. I came up with this idea for the cam chest, and I actually reached out to one of my previous competitors during the People's Champ show, Al Hackle, which he's a insane builder in his own right. And I was like, hey, man, you want to help me with this? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. So he made my cam chest while we were doing the other stuff on the motor. So, and then just actually this past weekend, I was down in Tennessee and we were building the crank assembly, building with our own flywheel, well, True and Osborne flywheels, our rods and pistons. It's all custom. Like this whole motor's pretty much handmade. So
that's,
I'm pretty excited.
Wild, dude.
Yeah, it'll be pretty cool. Cause what we're going to do, I'm building the bike. It's an 8-valve. So it's a 1926 JD bottom end, like a regular JD flywheel of the cases. And then the rest of it is an overhead valve conversion. So the heads are modeled from like a set of British racing Rudge heads that they used to run in the 20s and 30s. And we took those and I scanned a real set that I got from Billy Lane, and I scanned a real set. And then we converted them into our own model. And Kevin, my buddy that does all of our my engineering stuff, he actually ported the heads and made them flow better. And then we sized them for modern day valves and that kind of thing. So we're like literally hand building an 8-valve JD race engine, which is like kind of like what Harley used to have back in the day.
Wow.
So it'll be pretty cool. Yeah, I'm excited to hear it run, to say the least.
Yeah, no shit.
Now, and then we're supercharged.
Have you been, and then you're supercharging it? Is that what you said?
Yeah, we're going to supercharge it too. So.
Oh, fuck. What was I just going to say? Oh, have you been what's the documentation process been on this one?
I've been like, I same thing, like with my Instagram and Facebook and stuff, I do updates, not as much as I should be doing. Cause like, obviously it's not, restricted like the Biltwell competition is, but here in the next couple months, you're going to see heavy posts coming from my corner. Cause I'm at the phase now where there's no more real putting it off. Like I have to get it done. So, I'm like in full tilt on it at the moment. Like nothing else is going to happen until this bike's done. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not that far away.
No, I mean, we're already our center of March now. So, I have like 2.5 months, 3 months.
Oh my God. But the frame's done. You casted all the pieces for the frame, right?
So the frame, what I did is I built it all. I bent it all by hand. And then what I did is I laser cut the joints to make them look like casted pieces. And then I welded them all together. Then I shaped them by hand to make them look like they were forged pieces. And then the front end, I completely casted that like you would the old school. So I took molds from a 27 FHAC Harley Davidson race fork. and I poured them all by hand with wax. Then from there, I took the waxes out of my molds and I sent my waxes to the foundry. The foundry poured my waxes like a lost wax cast pattern. They poured my waxes into the front end pieces. And then when I got those back from the foundry, I took and I machined them all on manual machines. I machined them for my front end. So my whole front end is manually machined from wax, from the wax pieces. And I'm building it all here in house. And then the thing that kind of adds the really crazy custom kick to the whole bike is, I'm calling it the Pennsylvania 8. Okay. That's kind of the name I dubbed the bike, the Pennsylvania 8. And the 8 is obviously the 8 valve engine configuration. So it'll have 4 exhaust pipes coming off of it. So 2 in the front head, 2 in the rear head. And it's going to be short little dump out. So it's going to be extremely loud. We're lightening the flywheels a ton. So this thing's going to, like, we call it wicking. Like, it's going to rev really fast. It's going to wick up.
Yep.
It's going to rev really fast. We're throwing a supercharger, a draw-through supercharger on it. So it's going to be forced induction. And then the really crazy twist of the whole deal is it's a single-sided hardtail. So I'm running tall, white, 28-inch clincher tires. So it'll be white wheels with a black bike with all gold leaf and then single-sided rear. So the whole back of the bike is supported from one side. So when you're looking at it from one side, there's nothing holding the wheel on the back. It'll just be kind of floating up.
Which side custom is, hub. You know, the A side has got the you won't see the swing arm or side arm, or I guess not.
Yeah, it would be the sprocket side has the support. So
gotcha. That makes sense for the torque.
Yep, exactly. And then we made our hubs everything. Like pretty much nothing on this bike is not built. Like literally we built the frame, the front end, we literally built the wheel hubs, the engine. All of the engine, I'm building the bars, I'm fabbing the tanks right now. It's going to be like a complete hand-built board track style racer. So
I can't wait to hear what it sounds like too.
It's going to be, I'm so excited. And then in October, so we're going to be there obviously at Born Free. And then October, I'm going to have it at Sons of Speed. I'm going to take it out and rip it around the track. So
yeah, fuck yeah, you are.
It's going to be exciting.
That's wicked. That's wicked. Well, you know, when we were there last, you know, you had a lot going on. And then you were like, I'm going to build fucking 10 off-road rigids to run the Biltwell 100.
Yes. Yes. And that's like, dude, that's still happening. Just not as soon as I wanted it to. What happened was... Our good buddy Billy Lane, he reached out and he said, you know, hey, do you want to do a build off with us? And I said, heck yeah, what do you want to do? And he goes, do you want to build? He has a Henderson motor. We have a Henderson motor, being, you know, Tom, and ours is a 1919, which is still technically, it was a cast in Detroit, an early Henderson motor. Okay. And Billy's is later Excelsior version, which was cast in Chicago when Ignaz Schwinn took over from the Excelsior Motor Company. And we're going to do an old fashioned, you know, biker build off, us versus Billy with Henderson's. And then Tom and him are going to go out and race on the track in our build with him. So when we signed up for that, because I got to build that whole bike from scratch, the frame, the front end, everything. Our motor wasn't even ready, and we sent our motor up to our good buddies up at Fourth Coast Fours, which is Loring and Mark Hill. They're regarded as like the king of the fours, the inline four cylinder early American motorcycles.
Okay.
They rebuilt our entire engine, and they did it with all super, super fast hop up parts, period correct, obviously, for those things. And I got to build the bike and have it ready for October. So that kind of put a hitching my plans for
June. So you got to finish this bike for June, and then you got to build another bike for October. Now, is this something that will be on the Outlaw TV?
Yeah. So if Outlaw TV takes off, it's supposed to be on there with Billy and stuff. So we'll see how it goes. Because what we're doing right now is like all we have for the bike right now is the engine. Physically, just the engine. I have to build everything else. I'm making it 100% Henderson correct. So it'll be a board track format, but still be the real frame and everything. So I have to scan the Henderson pieces and all that stuff. And we got to document everything and video it. So Billy will post on his end and we'll post on our end and we'll do it on, you know, social media as well as our YouTube channels. And document this whole thing like an old school build off. So,
wow,
it should be pretty fun.
Well, I hope that Outlaw TV does go well for them. You know, I've seen that they just started kind of pushing it. Him, Jesse, and Paul, like this last week was really the first thing I've seen out of all of them, kind of a combined effort to talk about it and
yep,
and move forward with it. So.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Obviously, that's like a massive undertaking with funding, you know. And I think, you know, obviously people are seeing how well Jason's stuff was took off with On the Roam. So hopefully I think the more content for motorcycles, the better, man.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a lot out there. Some done well, some not done so well. What did you think about the On the Roam series?
Oh, I loved it. It, you know, obviously had a bunch of our personal friends in there.
Yeah.
I really did like it. I think they did, to date, I think that's the best recently that I can think of somebody kind of capturing what they're passionate about and putting it on a screen, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously they have the ability to do that. I hope it keeps going because it's I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't you know, I saw a bunch of people in the motorcycle industry talk about it. I'd be interested to hear like how it was taken, you know, outside of the motor, like, you know, Momoa obviously has a whole different market of fans, right? That's that doesn't like motorcycles. I'm curious to see like what the crossover is, you know, like did he, you know, were those people stoked about it? You know, he wasn't wearing, you know, a fish uniform and the Trident. But, you know, he's right. Still fucking Momoa, you know, doing some rad shit. I hope that it, you know, I just hope that, I guess for the sake of the show, that it brought in some of those, some new people that really enjoy that and they can continue to do it.
I do too. You know, I think it's really cool. Like it's not just like primarily focused just on one thing, you know, he's kind of bringing light to everybody that's handcrafting and just, you know, doing what their passion in general. So, I mean, with that being said, I think it could really appeal to a lot of people and maybe not everybody will watch every single episode, but I think it's really cool and I hope it continues because there really isn't a lot of other stuff out there like that right now.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was hoping that Cinemax wouldn't pick up another season. Not that I was hoping, but I was like, you know, here's a possibility. Is Cinemax doesn't want to do another season, and then Momoa gets teamed up with fucking Outlaw TV and, you know, helps kind of bridge that gap and, like, you know, bring even more people on to Outlaw TV.
Right, like promote that single-handed streaming service. I got you.
Yeah. I thought that would have been like that could have been a good thing for everybody. I think maybe not as good for Momoa and everybody on that show on Cinemax, but
yeah,
just a thought I had. You know,
no, that's a good perspective. And that's like the first I've really, really talked about it with anyone outside of her. You know, so.
Well, wicked. So you are going to build those bikes for the Biltwell. Because I talked to Grant this morning. He said there is 22 racers signed up right now for the pre-60 class.
For what? For Sons of Speed?
No, for Biltwell 100.
Oh, the Biltwell. Oh, yeah. So, so I can't make the 100.
Yeah, it's
this
in a
year,
couple of weeks.
But yeah, obviously. And I actually, our good buddy Detroit, he like really put a hitch in my plans here. He tried getting me to go and I actually was determining on which way I could make that work, but it's just not going to be possible. So I am going to have them. It's looking definitely more like next year now. Cause like after October, I'll be pretty freed up.
Yeah.
I won't have all these crazy deadlines and stuff. So I definitely want to do that. Cause you know, I want to try to expose people our age more and more to these vintage bikes, and you have to realize you don't need to be a millionaire to own one. You know, I'm not rich by any means, not even close. So you just have to know the right people, and you can get into these things for a lot of times cheaper than these bikes you're going and buying, you know? So,
yeah. And it just takes a little elbow grease and a want to, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, right now we're at that threshold where it's starting to change and there's starting to become more events for these things, you know? So they're a lot of fun. You got your Sons of Speeds, you got your Trogs, you know, you got some cross country events with them. They're fun to ride, man. Obviously, you know, you've ridden old bikes. It's a lot of fun. I'm just trying to keep that whole thing alive, you know, and keep people interested in it and do my part to help that. So,
well, do you got any cross country racing coming up? Are you, Cannonball didn't happen last year. You guys didn't do it. I mean, that's why we were at the block party.
Right. No, not anytime soon. We're going to focus on, so I have, you know, we have Sons of Speed. It's like three events out of the year. We have, you know, these builds and stuff this year, but I think what I'm going to do is kind of start reeling back and start focusing on more like shorter vintage things. Like, you know, the biggest hard thing about the Cannonball is you have to dedicate so much time to it. It's a month long event, and it's a massive financial burden and everything else. So we're going to like kind of start focusing on like maybe smaller stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of reel it in a little bit. And I'm actually been talking about, and actually this is the best time to talk about it with you, is the first time you're hearing about it. I really am getting my head around and I'm working on this big project right now. I got a bunch of period correct 3-bar hill climbers, which is a JD. Like they ran Banjo, to 2-cam engines in them, like a JD engine. And you don't have to run a JDH engine. You can run a regular JD engine or whatever. They're a Keystone chassis, but it's a period correct hill climber frame with a 3-bar support. And that's why they call it a 3-bar. I'm thinking of like possibly starting our own hill climbing event.
That would be sick.
Yeah. And like dedicating it strictly to vintage bikes. And like, you know, I'm pumping out like 15 of these frames right now to like infuse the market with them. And you know, get people kind of excited about it. Cause you can not only hill climb these bikes, but you can also take them out and ride them on the road too, you know, and then you got a really badass old school bike. So, and to me, it's like one of the coolest looking old bikes there is, these old hill climbers. But I want to start this event, and I think it'd be really fun. It'd be like a day event. Like, you don't have to dedicate a ton of time to it. You come out with a bunch of buddies, and we're all on a bunch of old bikes, and we go ripping up these hills and stuff with them and beat them and, you know, have fun with them. So
yeah, that sounds amazing. Do you want to do that? You're going to try and do that in Pennsylvania?
I don't know where yet, honestly. We were actually like scouting some locations down in Tennessee here this past weekend, so that's a possibility. I wouldn't mind, even if we had to turn it into kind of like what the Trog used to be, where it was one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast.
Yeah.
That's a possibility, depending on how much interest we can get going. But it's something I want to do. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I'm kind of just putting the feelers out right now and getting people aware of it.
Well, here's the deal. If you get your shit together and you get that fucking Born Free bike built, you could bring one of your hill climb bikes down to Tennessee and race me up the hill at Tennessee Motorcycle Music Revival.
Oh yeah. So that's in May, right?
That's the weekend. Yeah. The weekend before Memorial Day.
Oh man. That's like right. That's right. When like Sons of Speed is too.
Oh yeah. It's the weekend before Sons of Speed. Yeah.
That would be killer. Yeah, because you guys have that sweet hill over there.
It's a great hill. And they're actually going to – so, you know, there's been some – you know, the fucking Sportsters are gnarly as fuck, right? Like, so they're going to – half the hill they're going to make even more difficult for those Sportsters. And then the other half's going to be like – you know, I rode my fucking flathead up it the first year. More than
you rode, like, on the back of a dresser up that thing, didn't you?
I rode – I mean, going up was easier than coming down that motherfucker, okay?
I believe it.
I mean, coming down on my flathead without any brakes and seeing a crowd of fucking people at the bottom was quite frightening.
I bet, dude.
I mean, the fucking, I went down with the motor turned off and it immediately just cranks up and starts fucking running. And that flathead doesn't like to do anything but run wide open, you know?
Yep.
That was fucking sketchy. I do have a brake on it now.
Oh, good.
I rigged that up. They made me put a brake on it for Flat Out Friday.
Oh, man.
But now that I got a brake on it, I want to put lights on it and run it down the fucking road, too.
Yeah, you might as well. That's a badass bike. I always liked that bike.
Dude, it's hot, man. It fucking runs good. It cranks right up. It goes.
So, hear me here, dude. How sweet would a bunch of, like, old 45s and old, like, JDs ripping up a freaking mountain be? Like,
it'd be sick. So, I've heard talk that there is an event in Colorado. And it's called the Flathead Hill Climb. And it's nothing but flatheads. And the hill is so gnarly that you have to tune your bike for like the top half of the hill. Because you gain so much altitude and it gets steeper that you want your bike to be running at its best once you get to the top, you know?
Wow.
But I have yet to find this. I've just heard about it, you know? But it sounds like sick, and it just thinking about old bikes running up a hill. I mean, some of the most awesome photos ever taken are people fucking, you know, riding old bikes up hill climbs, dude. I mean, by a long shot.
I mean, look at the entry to the Harley Museum, man. That's freaking Petrolli on a hill climber, you know?
Yeah.
It's killer. I just think it would be an absolute blast, and honestly, what are we missing right now? We have the vintage board track races with Sons of Speed. We have the Bilwell 100 with some desert races, that's such an awesome thing they're doing, and I want to keep that going. We have the Trog. You know, if we add, like, there's these cross country events. If we add the hill climb, we pretty much cover all the bases.
You know? Yeah, I mean, there are hill climbs, you know, all over the country, but there is nothing that is targeting vintage motorcycles. Vintage.
Right. I think it would be really cool, man.
I think you just have to find the place. Book it. They will come.
Yeah, that's like the hardest part, you know, because it's like, do you base it around another event that has people there already? Do you try to make it its own standalone thing?
I mean, I think you got to do almost your own standalone thing with that.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you, because that's kind of like what I was thinking to myself was, you know, make this like its own dedicated deal.
I mean,
like,
you know, Tennessee, excuse me, I don't want to speak on their behalf, but, you know, that hill climb, it can go multiple directions. You know, people are going to start bringing like hill climb dirt bikes out, hooligan bike. Like, it's either somebody could step in and be like, all right, no, we're going to do a vintage fucking hill climb this day, you know, during the motorcycle music revival, and just run it, you know, because right now it's kind of done all in house and it's, you know, it's awesome, but you know, that might be this fucking spot, you know, the facilities there, the crowd would fucking show up. I mean, what sounds cooler than an old bike fucking ripping at full throttle?
Oh, dude, it's hard to beat, especially like if we start adding some like crazy valve configurations and all that kind of stuff, like start pumping out some like actual period correct race bike. That'd be, oh my God.
Yeah. It'd be epic.
I mean, that's like a show in itself, you know? I think it'd be fun. And it's so funny you said that about the Tennessee thing. Cause I was thinking that same thing. Cause I remember watching all those videos, you guys ripping up and down on that thing. I'm like, man, that looks like a fun hill.
Well, and that dirt is really good. Like even when it got rained on, you know, the top layer was slick, but it's great. I mean, there's a reason that it has one of the most prominent fucking motocross races in the world, you know, at that facility, because that dirt is so good.
Right.
So
you got me thinking now, dude.
It's a thought. It is a thought.
Well, when you're there this year and you're talking to your people, keep in your mind.
Dude, my people they've been trying to talk to me while I've been talking to you. They've been sending messages.
Perfect. That's a good thing.
Yeah, they're already asking, Danger, what else can you do? What else can you do?
Well, there we go, dude. We piggyback the event together, and we turn it into a vintage hill climb event. Well, just part of it, I guess.
I mean, I think that, you know, it's definitely a good option. And, you know, it's ripe. You know, like, they've already got that going. You know, they just want to see an event. They, really what they're trying to do is just give the people something else to watch and enjoy. You know, while using their facility. But, like, it's going to get out. Like, if it goes full on dirt bikes, that hill's, you know, it's not quite, you know, a dirt bike hill climb. You know, like.
Well, yeah, modern hill climbers are, you know, freaking 100 horsepower with 30-foot swing arms on them, you know.
And it's with crazy. And like, even the Sportsters, like, the Sportsters are kind of like, you know, it works because we've been doing like drag racing up it, you know, so it gives that element. But it's not like you're not going to make it to the top.
Right.
You know, but I think with just a little bit of added, you know, finesse to that hill, we could make it really entertaining for vintage bikes.
Oh man, that would be so cool.
Yeah, you should come down and check it out before the weekend of your race.
Yeah, I would love to. I've been that's one of the things I've been trying to hit for the last few years now. Actually, the one year, if you remember, I drove right by you guys while you were there. I was heading to Texas.
I remember we talked about that.
Yeah, that'd be killer. I'd definitely be interested.
So. All right, so if somebody wants to follow around with your builds, any action from you and competition distributing, what are the best channels or avenues for people to follow along and reach out and
contribute? I have my Instagram, which is action spelled with an X, 88 Jackson. That's my personal Instagram. And then I also, with this new build, I've been cross-posting with our company, competition_distributing. Because it's that same
era. You guys specialize in
Everything 1910 to 1936, primarily Harley Davidson, Indian, and Flying Merkle. All old stuff. But we do a lot of engine components, and we're getting big into chassis and all that kind of stuff. So check us out.
It's wicked. Hey, Sean, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk shop. On Danger Dan's Talk Shop.
Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Yep. Talk to you soon.
Boom. All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. If you listen to the Mama Tried Flat Out Friday Harley Davidson Museum podcast, you should go check out the video on the YouTubes. We got another podcast dropping at the end of this week on the YouTubes with Bobby Goodtimes and Drew from Evolution Cycles. It is a banger, dude. I'd met Bobby a couple of times. I'd met Drew a couple of times. And, you know, we really dug into, you know, Bobby's past. It's really good. It starts out fucking, it's a wild one. It's a fun one. You're going to enjoy it. And it'll be on the YouTubes this weekend, which is, I don't know what the date is. After you hear this shortly, a couple of days later, it'll be out. Thank you for tuning in. Go to mcshoptees.com, lowbrowcustoms.com, knivesmadebynick.com, and motorcyclesherpa.com. Check them out. Peace.